Welcome, everybody, to Redacted. We are not Facebook or Instagram, so we're actually up and running tonight. The rest of the internet is collapsed. Hey, everyone, I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
Good to see all of you guys. Welcome in. It's 4 p.m. Eastern time. It is Super Tuesday. What a crazy day it is. Oh, my gosh. We've got a lot of things to talk about here. We're going to talk about Elon Musk's tweet saying this is worse than 9/11, the 9/11 terror attacks on the United States. What's happening at the U.S. southern border right now is an absolute disaster, and new revelations about what the Biden administration has been doing secretly, and they don't want to tell you the information about this. And the only reason we know about it is, of course, litigation. Once again, documents released during litigation.
Yes. We litigate our values.
That's right.
No matter what you think about the most litigious country in the world, it gets us someplace sometimes. We're also going to talk about these massive Texas wildfires. Also, Letitia James, the sworn enemy of Donald Trump, is going after the beef industry. Is this frivolous? Yes, it is. We're going to take a look at the lawsuit, and it might surprise you. It might not.
Yeah, we're also going to talk about this, you know, a big paper that was published around COVID and the vaccines. And why mRNA vaccines? Well, we can't go into all the details here on YouTube, of course. We can't on Rumble. But, this scientific paper has been pulled. We'll tell you why. And we're going to have one of the authors of that paper on the show tonight to talk all about that. Plus, we'll talk about Victoria Nuland resigning. Can you believe that? The deep state is in panic mode. It's Super Tuesday. Is Nikki Haley officially done? What is going to happen tonight? All of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Warmonger, one of the most evil people humans in the world, is out.
Responsible
resigning.
For copious deaths in copious regions, war, destruction,
coup in Ukraine,
all of that stuff. So I wish her an unhappy retirement.
Yeah.
And a perpetual yeast infection.
Perpetual yeast infection. That was a great band. I love that band in college. I used to love listening to Perpetual Yeast Infection in college. It was great. It was really fantastic. They were a one-hit wonder, though, by the way. The other thing about, you know, the Bass is now taken over for her temporarily. So Now Bass, John Bass, famous for, of course, his brilliant Afghanistan withdrawal.
Oh.
He was literally the guy in charge of the Afghanistan withdrawal. He's taking over for Victoria Nuland. And so that really should give you an idea about what's going to happen in Ukraine. If the guy who's responsible for the failed Afghanistan withdrawal is now in charge of the show running the deep state in Ukraine, that's where Ukraine stands on the importance meter tonight in the United States.
Right. So we have a lot
of news.
Oh, please.
I was going to say, maybe that's an indicator that he's going to bumble us out of all these wars that we bumbled ourselves into.
Yeah, I mean, if he didn't get us into the war, we can forgive him for bumbling us out, right? Like, bumble us out of more.
Well, wait a second. You know, with Ukraine, it's like, but there are no Americans in Ukraine, right? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Know what I mean? There's no Americans in Ukraine. There's no American equipment in Ukraine, right? So what do you have to worry about if we leave it all behind like we did in Afghanistan? Well, half of it's already blown up anyway. The Abrams tanks and everything else we've sent to Ukraine's already been blown up. So I guess there's nothing really left for them to bring out if they're going to bring it home. It's
well,
all destroyed.
We'll see.
Oh, boy.
So it's a busy day. We're going to talk about all of this new revelation about the U.S. flying immigrants into unknown airports from their home countries. We're also going to talk about the Texas wildfires. Also, I just want to warn you that the story that we do last about the COVID vaccine study that was retracted for political reasons, clearly, we're not going to do that on YouTube for obvious reasons. So I just want you to be prepared to join us where we go, where we can speak about that. So you have been amply warned. Before we talk about this immigration story or migrant story, however you'd like to call it.
Illegal aliens. That's what I like to say.
Okay.
Yeah. because that's what my Orcas doesn't want us to say. So I'm going to say exactly what he doesn't want us to say. So they are illegal immigrants. They are illegal aliens in the United States.
Okay. We'll talk about the semantics later. First, we want to tell you about our friends over at Bank on Yourself, because Wall Street wants you to put your money in an IRA or the 401k. You know why? Because then you're partnering with the government to invest in the stock market. But of course, they tell you max out your 401k and your IRA, but there is a better way to grow and protect your hard-earned money, the retirement plan alternative that's never had a losing year in over 160 years. That's Bank on Yourself. It's guaranteed predictable growth and retirement income. With Bank on Yourself, your plan never goes backwards when the markets tumble. Your principal and growth are locked in. So it's tax-free retirement. You know what your tax rate is when you retire, which is zero under the current tax law. So take a look at what this might have to offer you for your retirement plan if you do not want to be dependent on the government, which you don't. I think we collectively agree on that. So go to bankonyourself.com/redacted and we'll send you a free report about the proven retirement plan alternative that banks don't want you to know. Again, that's bankonyourself.com/retirement.
Redacted.
Oh, sorry. Bankonyourself.com/redacted.
That's right. All right. Let's talk about this. So Elon Musk warns this is worse than 9/11. The groundwork is being laid for something far worse than 9/11, he says. And those aren't my words. Those are the words of Elon Musk, who posted this article on X a few hours ago about the U.S. southern border. This administration is both importing voters and creating a national security threat from unvetted illegal immigrants, he writes. It's highly probable that the groundwork is being laid for something far worse than 9/11, just a matter of time. And the article, of course, from the Daily Mail that he tweeted about is this: Biden administration admits flying 320,000 migrants secretly into the United States to reduce the number of crossings at the border has national security vulnerabilities. So what exactly is going on here? Well, the Biden administration has been flying migrants around the United States. And we've covered this here on the show. It's just great that the Daily Mail is now covering it. We've been covering it with a lot of great journalists here on the show about how these secret flights have been happening. And they've been busted. They've been caught in a lot of cases. But there's a lot we still don't know about this. According to the Daily Mail, quote, Customs and Border Protection has refused to disclose information about a program last year secretly chartering flights for thousands of undocumented immigrants from foreign airports directly to U.S. cities. So this isn't even just like ferreting them around the United States. This is bringing them in, chartering them, giving them full passage right into the United States. It means that while record numbers of migrants were flowing over the southern border, I'm continuing to read from there, the Biden White House was also directly transporting them into the country. Why is this happening?
As in direct flights from their home airport.
It's unbelievable.
Free flights to the United
States. Free flights, like show up at this particular airport, we'll take great care of you, we'll bring you right into the United States. Why is this happening? Well, according to a lawsuit, go ahead, Dave.
Remember how long it is, but I was just reading that about 20 minutes ago.
Right. And so if you're someone who's ever migrated to a place like we have, you have to get background checks. You have to get fingerprints. You have to prove that you have never had any criminal record, and or else the place that you're going normally can say no thank you to you. So those of us who've been through that process, it's like a slap in the face. Why did we do that?
Yeah. And so why exactly is this happening? Well, according to the lawsuits, the flights were part of the CBP One app, the Customs and Border Protection One app. They created an app which allows migrants to seek asylum with the app from their home country. So what the hell is the CBP One app? Well, here it is. This is your tax dollars were used to create this, the CB One app. Now take a look at this. Here's how the app works. It is on October 28th, 2020. They've rolled out this app. It is a mobile application that serves as a single portal to a variety of CBP services through a series of guided questions. The app directs each type of user to the appropriate services based on their needs. As part of the program, they then can gain accessibility and advanced submission points and scheduling for your different border arrival, port of entry information, where you're coming into the United States. All of it can be done right through the app. This is your tax dollars being used to create this app. to create a mobile app that allows illegal aliens to make it easier to invade the United States. That's what this app is. It's unbelievable. Bricksuit tweets this, 1,500 illegal aliens per day are granted entry via this app. And they're not counted in the figures that Customs and Border Patrol release for border encounters. You know, when they say they have these encounters at the border. So these are not counted in that data.
So what was the data? David, you usually know these numbers right off the top. So what they were saying this year was how many just this, not to put you on the spot, but we already know there's been a certain.
This year?
Yeah, that we know at
like
the southern 300 border.
Some, 300 and some odd thousand came
okay.
in via this method.
So let's
and then
just.
It's like, it's almost 10 million over the border.
Over right. this year.
Now that's even a conservative number.
Yeah.
Okay.
10 million.
Yeah.
I've seen estimates now where it could be as high as 30 million. 30 million, according to some reports. The 10 million is like a very conservative number. Think about that
think
for
about
a second.
10 million is probably only those that are like officially processed.
Exactly.
So we have people that are coming, like, you know, sneaking in that are not officially processed from even Canadian border. I mean,
all the time.
Who knows what the number is?
And being flown in and not being processed as part of the official numbers. So they're not a part of the official numbers. So what was previously unknown was that the administration was providing direct flights to app users from over 43 different countries. We didn't know this. Officials have refused to provide any details of who was flown in. And by the way, to where, to what city? Like, I would love for reporters to ask Corinne Jean-Pierre in the White House press briefing room, this story has now emerged. Where are these illegal immigrants being ferried by Customs and Border Protection flights, chartered flights? Where? To what cities? And we're working on that part of the story here on Redacted. So we are working on that. We should have an update tomorrow on that part of the story. According to Colin Rugg, who just posted this on X, though, it gets even worse. Quote, the program at the center of the FOIA litigation is perhaps the most enigmatic and least known of the Biden administration's use of the CB1 app, the one cell phone scheduling app. Even though it's responsible for almost invisibly importing by air 320,000 aliens with no legal right to enter the United States since it got underway in late 2022. And this is according to journalist Todd Benzman. Quote, under these legally dubious parole programs, aliens who cannot legally enter the country use the CBP1 app to apply for travel authorization and temporary humanitarian release from those airports. The parole program allows for 1 to 2 year periods of legal status during which adults are eligible for work authorization, which is what David was just talking about. So they get legal status for 2 years. God knows, and we don't know where they're going. And are they're supposed to show up for some sort of a court date years from now to be processed? Give me a break. No one knows where they are. Meanwhile, in Texas, a new bill would allow law enforcement to arrest and expel migrants, but the Supreme Court, of course, has blocked that until at least next week when the court will take up that case. But let's go back to what Elon said, because I think it's really important. This is far worse than 9/11, he said. That false flag event was designed, of course, 9/11, was designed with the help of the CIA to take us into an endless war on terror. We know that. Take away our freedoms with the Patriot Act, create the largest expansion of the military-industrial complex in our nation's history, destabilize the Middle East to help Israel. And, of course, all of that was planned years in advance. And all of that we know documented well. Read the writings of Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz. It's all there. All of that was well documented at the time. And I point you to my extensive interviews on that piece of it, on the subject of the controlled demolition of the towers, the Twin Towers, how those pilots couldn't have possibly flown those flights. Deep dive interviews on that very subject here on the channel. So how could this be far worse than 9/11? Well, use your brain, because 9/11 was an invasion of other countries, right? Now we're watching an invasion right before our eyes that will destroy the United States and create a uniparty liberal government. This is what Colonel Douglas MacGregor just tweeted. He said, we need to secure our borders now. The southern border needs 70 to 80,000 troops there right now. We need to build the right barriers. We must change the way we do business, he writes. And he's absolutely right about that. It's worth remembering that the United States currently has U.S. forces protecting the border of South Korea from a North Korean invasion. We have U.S. troops right there on the parallel. U.S. currently has U.S. forces protecting Taiwan from an invasion of China. The U.S. has no troops on our southern border protecting our own country. And this is by design, by the way. Since the early 1800s, the United States had troops stationed at the southern border. In the year 1829, this guy, President Andrew Jackson, ordered troops to the southern border to protect trading and American citizens.
Oh, there's no video?
Yeah, we don't have video of Andrew Jackson.
Oh.
Do we have any video of Andrew Jackson? We don't.
I looked for some, but I couldn't sketch fast enough. So
old Hickory hitting some people. Anyway, President Andrew Jackson ordered troops to the southern border to protect trading and American citizens from attacks and theft. Sound familiar? Oh, protect business? Protect Americans from what was happening at the border? It seems like a remarkable idea. The liberal media, not surprisingly, of course, made fun of Donald Trump for saying that Andrew Jackson was his favorite president. Recall this Salon article, Donald Trump's favorite president, Andrew Jackson, as a father of the white republic, it said in that Salon article. Father of the white republic. So thanks to President Jackson's moves, we had troops there in different roles, basically up until about World War II in some capacity. Then we needed soldiers to go fight Nazis in Europe. And now, of course, we are arming and teaming up with Nazis in Ukraine. So the times have certainly changed, haven't they? It's unbelievable what is going on right now. And there's certain things I can't even talk about here on YouTube as it relates to what's happening right now in this election and what's happening at the U.S. southern border. We put together a special report. I want you all to go and download it. It's totally free. It's a co-authored. You cannot get this on YouTube. We can't even talk about some of the stuff on here because they will block us for saying it. So go grab it. It's a free report that I put together that I've co-authored. Go to redacted.inc/illegal and download this thing. It's totally free. And it's a deliberate strategy to influence the 2024 elections. We've got some incredible guests coming up here this week specifically on how this border crisis is election fraud, what it's actually doing to our country. Tomorrow, you don't want to miss one of our special guests on this topic, who's written books on the invasion of the United States. And one of the smartest individuals on this topic. We're going to have him on the show tomorrow. Very excited about that. But this is an absolute disaster. So, I mean, guys, throw it out there. You guys, what in the chat room think? Am I right about this? Worse than World War, or worse than 9/11? I mean, this is what Elon Musk is saying, that this is worse than 9/11. Am I wrong that it's just really focused on the invasion piece of this? It's an invasion of the United States, not an outward invasion of like Iraq, Afghanistan, and of course, an expansion of the Patriot Act and
well, yeah, and I think rights. What's missing from all of this is an economist telling us what are the things that will fall like dominoes because of this, right? Who are the people who will suffer the most? Usually it's the most poor, the most disenfranchised. Why and how is this going to affect everyday Americans and our economy?
David, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, basically at this point, you're looking at more people have come in than the population of like the five or six biggest cities in the United States who are already short of resources, and they're prioritizing those limited resources to these immigrants right now. So it's like it's going to become a thing where people are fighting over resources because they're giving it to migrants. And so that's going to be, you know, like we're seeing thefts and everything all over the country from people breaking in and taking things. I don't know how many of those are possibly illegals, but I mean, I just going to get crazy. It already is.
Someone in the chat says, Baron Saturday says, it's not worse than 9/11, but it's really bad. I guess, if you're talking about hitting the banking infrastructure of the United States, right?
Right.
Throwing us into a massive recession.
Collapsing an economy,
killing 3,000 Americans, close to 3,000 Americans on that day. And not just Americans, people from other countries who were in the trade towers and so forth. But then think about 9/11. I guess if you think about it, though, because then it expanded to killing over a million people in Iraq.
Right.
Like 9/11 was an extension to go and kill a million Iraqis to destabilize Libya.
I think we've seen that the endless wars that resulted from 9/11, the numbers are 4.5 million. We saw that report come out of Yale, or I can't remember now. I can find it if you want.
I'm sure Victoria Nuland could answer that. Go ahead, Philip.
9/11 was a unifying event in the United States, where this is definitely a divisive event, and so there's also that to contend with. You know, it's like this is going to bring the nation together.
Well, and then I guess this could actually be worse in that it's creating a civil war, right? This will create a civil war in the United States, and this, you know, men of military age who are coming into the United States, and for what purpose? This destabilizing event, this to create this uniparty, you know, this uniparty liberal order in the United States is what they're trying to do. So we'll see. This is Super Tuesday, of course. We're going to be watching very closely today to see if at least, you know, one of the neocons falls this afternoon. If Nikki Haley finally packs it in this afternoon. We know that she stopped ad spending yesterday. So there are those reports over the past few days that she's been pulling back on that. So we're going to get to more news here on your Tuesday. We're going to talk about these Texas wildfires because something very mysterious is going on with that. Why is it specifically hitting the panhandle? And did President Biden let slip some information about exactly what's causing these, and maybe why it's okay for some and not for others? And what did Greg Abbott just say about the weirdness of the fires in Texas? We'll talk about that and its implications on the beef industry. We're also going to talk at Trump about Trump's biggest foe, Letitia James in New York, you know, the lead prosecutor in New York, who's now going after the meat industry
in the Amazon.
What? Like, this is
the
target.
She's the Attorney General of New York litigating for the Amazon and Colorado. It's a very strange lawsuit. We're going to take a look at it and remind ourselves that beef is not your enemy.
No, it's your friend. Beef is your friend. But first, do you find yourself with a substantial amount of cash right now that you're not investing? Maybe, you know, you're like Nancy Pelosi and you've made a lot of money in the stock market and you've just sitting on some cash. Or maybe you're like Victoria Nuland, who we learned, you know, has made tens of millions of dollars. So sitting on all this extra cash right now and you haven't invested it. You're not sure what to do. You see gold prices today hitting an all-time high. You saw Bitcoin hit an all-time high today as well. You're waiting to figure out where you can put your money. Well, if you invest, if you open an account with Moomoo right now, you can park that money and get 8.1% APY. That's right. So even if you're not investing it, it's like a savings account that you can park it. You have to know that 8.1 APY is 17 times the national average of a savings account or an interest rate. And there's no minimum deposit limit for cash sweeps. This is one of the highest interest rates that I know of. And what I love about Moomoo is it stands out by offering zero commissions, no platform fees for stocks, options, ETFs. It's packed with powerful market analysis features, absolutely free. For example, now is the U.S. stock market earnings season. So financial data, analyst ratings, earnings calendar, and all more free to use inside the app. But the best part is you're going to get 15 free stocks when you sign up, in addition to this 8.1% APY right now. So normally the account is 5.1. Right now, for a limited time, for 3 months, they're throwing an additional 3% just for parking your money there. So, you know, if you've got extra cash and you're keeping your powder dry, as they say, like before I make investments, I bought a couple of different companies today and I had that money sitting in the account waiting. And while it's sitting there, it's earning 8.1% APY or 5.1 APY if you've had the account for, you know, open for a few months. So for new account holders, 8.1% APY. And if you've had the account open for, you know, a few months now, you get 5.1% API or earn up to $5,000 in cash rewards when you transfer assets over to Moomoo. So redacted.inc/Moomoo. Go there, sign up, get 15 free stocks today. All right. Well, something very strange is happening in Texas. Besides millions of illegal immigrants pouring across the border, which we just covered, the state is dealing with the largest fires in Texas state history. Right now, going on as we speak, take a look.
As crews fight on, the largest fire in state history remains only 15% contained. The Smokehouse Creek Fire torching more than a million acres, hundreds of homes, and leaving at least two people dead. While the cause remains under investigation.
Yeah, still under investigation. We still don't know. We still have no idea what's going on. And that accounts for a number of fires across Texas that we still have no idea that are still under investigation 2 and 3 years later. So many years later, still under investigation. Really? Okay, some of them they've nailed down as accidental, but many of them are still wide open. We don't know what's causing these fires. Why, if something were to explode like a piece of equipment, it would blow outward? Why are things melted inward? Why are temperatures so stinking hot that street signs have melted? Aluminum has melted. Street signs and steel. What's going on here? People dying in their homes. They can't get out. Roads being closed because they can't escape. Many are asking why now, even during a snowstorm. I mean, this footage you're seeing here on your screen, it's snowing. This is overnight. Snow. Wildfires. In Texas, this is all happening, and it's hurting cattle ranchers the hardest. Those are the ones hit hard. Over 88% of all beef production comes from the panhandle in Texas. These fires could forever change the beef industry in the United States. And Governor Abbott, I thought this was really stunning, says that these fires are he's seen a lot of natural disasters. As governor, you see them. You see fires, you see hurricanes, you see everything. He says this is unlike anything he's ever seen before.
I have witnessed and observed some extraordinary damage in our state. It could be caused by hurricanes or tornadoes, and frequently when you see the aftermath of that damage, there's some semblance of a structure that is still there. When you look at the damages that have occurred here, it's just gone, completely gone. Nothing left but ashes on the ground.
So that's strange. Now, I just want to remind you all, so you know that we're being fair and honest here, that remember, Abbott is a member of the World Economic Forum. You can go to their website right now and see his smiling picture right there on the World Economic Forum's website, just as a reminder of what he is and what his history is. So this is all very odd. Locals are reporting aluminum street signs that are just melted down completely. Of course, aluminum melts at 660 degrees Celsius, which is about 1220 degrees Fahrenheit, which is not uncommon. You know, there are fires, of course, house fires and so forth, that can get up to 1400 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's not uncommon at all. But as ranchers are reporting, like, this is absolutely devastating to their herds, to their livestock, even with their eyes being burned out. Listen.
Ugh. This is one little calf here. I don't know if he's going to be all right. His feet are burned really bad.
No.
A lot of them have been blinded by it. It burned their eyelashes, eyelids, everything, and just burned all the hair off of them. Their feet are coming off, their hooves are bloody. It burned their udders. And, you know, even if they survive it, more than likely they're going to get pneumonia, they're going to get sick, they're going to die. And we've already had to put some down. It's better than letting them suffer and just die. It's extremely hard to see them suffering. I mean, they're just, like I say, I've raised some of them since they were babies, you know. It's just hard.
More than 85% of cattle in the state are raised in the Panhandle, where the Fields Mailer Ranch is located. State officials called the impact to cattle and crops catastrophic.
Trees standing perfectly green besides demolished buildings. It's not normal. It's not natural. People, of course, drawing very strong comparisons to what happened in Maui, as, you know, perhaps because we don't get answers from our government and we start to look at comparisons here in the past year to what happened here. Total neighborhoods, perfectly fine, yet adjacent to ones that aren't. Look at these satellite photos from, you know, these before and after images here of some of the Texas fires. Total neighborhoods just decimated, scorched to the ground. And with trees still standing. Multiple fires
have... Anything blue survive?
Oh, you're reading my mind.
Painted the cattle blue?
Well, you have a lot of people, of course, who are saying, yeah, I wish I had my roof painted blue. And a lot of people in the chat room right now are saying DEWs, directed energy weapons. I mean, a lot of people, many of you are saying, well, no, these were solar. Well, somebody's saying, no, not a directed energy weapon, solar issue. Okay. Well, we'll get there in a second. And I'm not saying it's one thing or another because we don't know. We don't have an official response yet. But I'm telling you what people are showing us and what people are saying. Multiple fires have struck dairies and meat processing plants in the Panhandle in the past year as well. So multiple fires in the same area.
Massive fire at a Texas dairy farm that killed 18,000 cows last Tuesday. Fire officials say a piece of equipment used at the farm is to blame.
It's like a broken record at this point because there's more, like seems like every week. Listen.
Now, the fire did break out just before 5:30 this evening on Montdale Road in Scott Township. The meatpacking plant was fully involved and explosions were heard as flames took over the structure.
I've lost count, actually, how many meatpacking plants are out there. Food distributors and related business entities have burnt down in recent history. Thankfully.
Yeah, last year was all the chickens and the eggs.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was first?
I know.
Get it? And the, you know, I can't keep track of all these business entities and food distributors and meatpacking plants right now because fortunately there's a website literally devoted now to tracking all of these fires. Listen.
Another food processing plant fire happened yesterday in Montebello, California. California has experienced its share of devastating processing plant fires. Back in April, a massive fire at Salinas, California broke out in the key agricultural region where tens of thousands were forced to evacuate their homes.
Some internet sleuths are doing the heavy lifting for us. So we wanted to put this on the map, on the screen from ZMaps. This shows the alarming rates of fires at manufacturing plants, grocery stores, food pantries, farms, and grain factories. It's likely that over 100 of these fires have taken place just this year.
Okay.
So we have to literally track them now with a map because that's how many processing plant fires have taken place in the United States.
Well, I guess the relevant question is then give me the stats for previous years so that maybe this is just food factories catch fire and they weren't being covered before.
Yeah, are cattle processing and meat processing plants every year? Are we having over 100 every year?
Are they, for whatever reason, prone to fires?
Right.
Do they never do stress testing? That's the relevant question because it could be a media cycle or it could be real.
So President Biden, of course, raised a lot of eyebrows and raised my eyebrows, which are pretty big. I don't have Eugene Levy eyebrows, but I certainly was curious when he said this about the roofs of homes. And he's specifically talking about Texas and these wildfires. Listen.
Because if you fly over these areas that are burned to the ground, you'll see in the midst of 20 homes that are just totally destroyed, one home sitting there because they had the right roof on it. And anyway, since I took office, FEMA's provided Texas alone.
Oh.
It's like he knows he went off script for a moment, you know?
Yeah.
And he looked over and then he went back to his teleprompter, you know? So they had the right roofs on it. What roof is right for a fire? What roof is correct for a fire in Texas right now that could have prevented this? Well, a lot of people...
Blue roof, Alex?
Yeah, maybe a blue roof. In fact, people in the Panhandle, these are Google Trends results this afternoon from the Panhandle. These are people searching, like who live in Texas. They're looking and their search term, directed energy weapons, or Amarillo and El Paso area, surging search results for directed energy weapons. Energy is the topic, and directed energy weapons. And then, of course, they even search more deeply, and they're looking at blue roofs as one of their search terms as well. And blue, the color blue. Like, okay. And so you're seeing, and look at, and also I'm curious, Minnesota was on here as one of the top spots for these searches right now, which I found it very interesting. So keep your eye on Minnesota. Like, is something about to happen in Minnesota that why so many people are concerned about directed energy weapons in Minnesota? Did I miss something? Is there something happening in Minnesota that I should know about over the past 24 hours? I couldn't find anything, but they're certainly looking for it. Of course, many people have said directed energy weapons were to blame for this. Of course, I have no evidence of that. But is President Biden hinting at that when he said that these people's roofs were fine or that, you know, they had the right type of roof and that's why their house survived? So what exactly are they? Because a lot of people say, no, there's no such thing as DEWs. They don't exist. Well, yeah, they do. All you need to do is go to Northrop Grumman's own website. You read all about directed energy weapons that they've developed with the help of the Pentagon. The high energy laser solutions defending our nation at sea, on land, and in the air. It's Northrop Grumman's directed energy solutions. Developed high energy laser solutions to defend our nation at sea, on land, and in the air. Join the Helldivers. USS Portland. Firing a successful attack. They have it right on their website back in 2021. The U.S. Navy even made a video about how these directed energy weapons work. Here's the USS Portland firing their test laser, successfully firing the solid test laser. And of course, people were sharing online the other night those videos, those images of the green lasers coming from outer space, saying, is this what they saw?
I mean, freaking laser beam.
Literally shot a drone right out of the sky with a laser. Like, that's what's happening here. Mark Esper from the Pentagon was proud to talk about the directed energy weapons program and the funding that the Pentagon is providing for these programs. Listen.
Secretary of Defense Mark Esper. It's an honor to join you for this year's Air, Space, and Cyberspace Conference. Thanks to our largest research and development budget in the department's history, we are advancing critical technologies to maintain our military edge in areas such as hypersonic weapons, directed energy, and autonomous systems.
As G. Fontes in our Rumble chat says, conspiracy theory equals fact. Well, yeah, I mean, yes, directed energy weapons do exist. Were they used in this situation? Who's to say? Many people online are saying, well, clearly now that Texas has like stood its ground against illegal immigration is going to stop the flow of illegal migrants across the border and push back against what Democrats want, that this is a stick in it to them. So they're launching directed energy weapons. Again, I have no proof of that whatsoever. But when the president makes comments about a roof and they have the right types of roof, that certainly raises eyebrows. Go ahead, Dave.
What is the blue roof? Is that just because refracts the laser?
There's a TikTok you can see about this. It kind of explains this from last year after the Maui fires. David, you want to explain how the waveform pattern like will just bounce off and not affect blue? Whoa.
Yeah, so I saw a guy do a test, and he had a laser, and he was going across different swaths of cloth. He went red, yellow, orange, all these colors, and then went across the blue, and it would burn every one, except it would refract from the blue. Like, it didn't harm the blue at all.
Right.
So it's something about the blue color and the laser color, maybe. I don't know if it has to do with the laser color, but it just does not seem to affect the color blue.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the light pattern, right? So it's just... It's like why when you're standing on white paint at a pool, you're fine. Your feet aren't going to burn, right? Mm-hmm. The same when you're standing on black and it's absorbing,
sure.
You're going to burn your feet off. I don't know. But this is why people have been painting their roofs blue.
Are they? Is that a thing?
The elite painting their houses. Like if they're painting their houses, they're painting their roofs, match the color.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. whatever Bill Gates has on his bunker, I'm going to do that too.
So Illuminated One in our chat says 666 hertz frequency is the indigo color.
Mm.
Mm, is that, I see that. Yeah. Yeah, I wonder. No, it's not the roofs are not. Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know what that was either. So, Philip, thanks for asking the question.
Interesting. Yeah.
I assumed it had something to do with reflecting the light waves. I just wasn't exactly sure.
We weren't up specific, on the meme.
Like, well, it's a frequency, as Anthony Goodley says in our chat here, says light is all about frequency. Color is frequency. And so, and you can watch these videos of them shining this laser and it's literally burning holes in all of these other colored pattern swatches.
Yeah.
But when it gets to the blue, it just bounces off.
Right.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
It is crazy. Anyway. We'll be watching what happens in Texas, but 15% contained. They did get some better wind patterns this afternoon, so our thoughts are with the cattle ranchers. I mean, at the heart of this, forget the dew weapons and all of that stuff for a second. At the heart of it is an entire industry, a beef industry, that's being upended, it seems like, in many parts, intentionally right now, at least from a litigation perspective. We know they're going after the meat industry. We know that the World Economic Forum absolutely wants you to stop eating meat. They do not want you to do that. They're blaming, of course, you're eating meat on climate change. But by the way, before Biden made those comments about the roof, he did say that the reason we're seeing these wildfires is as a result of climate change. So, again, you see the pattern here. They're coming after your meat.
Well, if I may, I'm going to poke a couple holes in this beef equals climate change as we talk about the Letitia James litigation about the meat industry. So Trump rival Letitia James. They call her Tish James.
Okay.
Okay. Let me just take that again. So Trump rival Letitia James is going after the beef industry. She's the attorney general of New York, and she's filed a lawsuit against JBS Foods, the world's largest beef producer based in Colorado, for what she calls misleading the public about its environmental impact. She says JBS has claimed that it will achieve net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2040, despite documented plans to increase production and therefore increase its carbon footprint. So that's her big gotcha, is they said they were going to reduce greenhouse gas and they're not going to do it. So she's saying that this is a type of fraud called greenwashing, and she wants to punish the meat industry. Take a look at this. These are some things that she says that they said, which are misleading, that she is then suing them for. They said that agriculture can be part of the climate solution. Bacon, chicken wings, and steak with net zero emissions. It's possible. That's fraud? To say that, that they think that meat is a sustainable part of a future.
So she's labeling that as fraud in her case? That's unbelievable.
No, these are things that they said that she's calling fraudulent greenwashing.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Yeah.
So these are part of maybe their marketing or something they've said.
Right.
And she's calling this out. By the way, you can do this in England. You can go after companies, right? That's why you see no television ads in England that are like, you know, makes you happier. Well, they can't say that, right? Because...
Okay, beyond just, though, that this is advertising, what they're doing is speaking on behalf of their industry. And I can prove to you that actually the meat industry has cut emissions and become more efficient in the United States alone. So I'm just curious if she didn't study the same things I did, because she's saying, even saying we will cut our own emissions 30% in 2030... and eliminate Amazon deforestation from our supply chain within 5 years. Also that they're going to achieve net zero greenhouse gas emissions. So, okay, you better watch out if you say that you think chicken wings and bacon should be a part of the climate future, because you could get litigated against also. Also, a lot of companies are saying that they're going to be carbon neutral or setting these climate change targets and not hitting them. They're not getting litigated for that, though. They're answering to their shareholders. Just last week, we covered how Audi said that they would not go all electric for their fleet by 2026. Is that an environmental promise? A contract that we can now litigate because they're not doing that? If so, businesses had better watch out. Don't say boo about the environment unless you can prove it. But this would mean that the attorney general has to prove that her claims about the meat industry are true. Here's from her press release about the litigation. She's saying industrial animal agriculture, however, has a substantial environmental footprint. Beef has the highest total greenhouse gas emissions of any major food commodity, and beef production is linked to large-scale deforestation, especially in the rainforest, which further drives climate change by releasing greenhouse gases and eliminating trees and plants that absorb and store carbon dioxide, known as carbon sinks. Okay, there are a lot of problems with this statement, and climate scientists know it. You would think that all of this can be presented in court. Here are a few. Beef production around the world, she points out, has a 14.5%. It accounts for 14.5% of annual global greenhouse emissions. That's true. But that is a global number. So you would think that in a less developed country as the United States, beef production probably would be much higher percentage of global greenhouse gas emissions per year. But in the United States, it is much lower. In fact, in the UK, beef production is only responsible for 4% annually. In the US, any guesses? Because guess what? In the US, we're pretty good at agriculture, at animal, at livestock agriculture. Any guesses what it is in the United States, boys?
2%.
You've looked at my notes again.
I was going to say.
No, she asked me at dinner. She asked me earlier today, and I got it correct at dinner. And she said, "You're right." So I want to get credit, and I want to be right again twice in one day.
Oh, okay. It really impressed the kids that he did get that right. Yeah. In the United States, beef production is only responsible for 2% of the country's emissions. It's nowhere near 14.5%. That's a global average. So that 14.5% number that climate activists spread around about meat production, that's misleading, and they know it. And they know that if other countries emulate the United States agriculture, they can get their numbers down too by just learning and improving. So this is a chart from the EPA showing that beef emissions in the United States adds up to only about 2.2%. So that's crazy. Why don't they know that? Why is she litigating on this 14%? In the U.S., again, we just get more efficient every year. According to the beef industry, so yeah, consider the source, they say doing more with less has decreased U.S. beef emission intensity by 29% and total carbon emissions by 30% since 1975. So given that since 1975, the industry has already reduced by 30%, it's not that much more for this JLB company to say, yeah, we probably can do another 30% in the next decade, given how much we are able to improve efficiency. Now, the attorney general says that this defendant is responsible for the destruction of the Amazon. Does she know that that's not in her purview? She's the attorney general of New York.
New York, but she's very concerned about the Amazon rainforest.
Right. Well,
which I mean, do you not realize that everything belongs to the United States?
Specifically New York?
Everything, yeah.
And the Amazon, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Where's the litigation against the military industrial complex? I mean, wouldn't that, if she's suing them next?
No,
right.
She's just concerned.
Yeah.
A little bit harder on the Amazon rainforest than meat.
That's a great point.
No, and why isn't she suing the Biden administration over illegal immigration, which her city is being crushed under right now? But this is her biggest concern.
Right. Well, maybe she believes that the Amazon are the lungs of the world because Greta Thunberg told everybody that. Here's what happened when climate journalist Michael Schellenberger asked the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change about that. Here he is talking to someone from that body, Dan Nepstead, when he said, are we actually dependent on the Amazon, like the whole world? Is it the lungs of the world? And that person said, it's bullshit. There's no science behind that. The Amazon produces a lot of oxygen, but it uses the same amount of oxygen through respiration. So it's a wash. You can read through this screen if you'd like to talk more about how, yeah, it's an ecosystem. It really does not do much for the state of New York. So somebody please update AG James on that matter. Another problem with this lawsuit is that it claims that greenhouse gas emissions result in total global warming and human-led climate change. We've been over this ad nauseum. Nobody has been able to prove that definitively. Human-led climate change has yet to be proven, even with IPCC United Nations models, where their entire job is to prove it, and they are trying to prove it. They still have not. Now, whenever I see these climate changers talking about meat, I have to wonder this. Why don't they also target junk food? That's interesting, right? So this comes from the Great Plant-Based Con, a fantastic book that I do recommend. She talks about how in the UK, the average person's food emissions are about 6,000 grams of carbon dioxide per day, with the emissions generated by meat, fish, and eggs and dairy only marginally more than those generated by a combination of sugar, sweets, chocolate, cakes, desserts, soft drink, alcohol, rice, bread, pasta, cereal, and food waste. So you have to ask then why the narrative has been so skewed towards an insistence that we reduce or eliminate consumption of meat and animal source foods. An alternative narrative could easily be, and could still be, cut down on sweets, empty carbs, junk food, and food waste to save the planet. Some studies support this absolutely, with one concluding that in some parts of the world, the greatest reduction in per capita carbon footprint would be achieved by reducing the consumption of sweets and ultra-processed food alone. Another by an Anglo-Brazilian research team finding that the eating of processed junk food makes climate change worse. So given that sweets, carbs, and junk food are, obesogenic, and have little to no nutritional value, while animal source foods are in their real whole form nutrient rich, this would seem to make much more sense, right? And so, given that one is terrible for you, why don't we focus on that one? Why won't we go after those industries for their impact on the planet?
That would be nice.
Yeah. Anyone?
No, maybe we should go after the Beyond Meat Burger factory.
Well, they have been proven to have a terrible impact on the planet because of the monocrops and the high processing that mm-hmm. comes from that. And also, this study published just in January of 2024 shows that processed food, amongst which these, you know,
meat patty
yeah. foods, are associated with at least 32 damaging health outcomes.
Be interesting to look at.
Including cancer, heart disease, anxiety, all-cause mortality. So why doesn't the AG go after those foods, which are neither good for the planet nor our bodies? You know?
It'd be interesting. Have you seen, like, the McPlant? You know, McDonald's mm-hmm. has their... I don't know. Are
Want
they
nothing
using,
to do with it.
Yeah, I would never touch that with a 10-foot pole. Actually, I would. I would touch it with a 10-foot pole. I'd have someone throw it up and I'd smack it.
Yeah.
But I would love to see like a McPlant versus like a quarter pounder with cheese. Like what impact it actually has, not from Letitia James's mouth, but what actual, the meat production versus the McPlant.
Yeah. I was on
breaking news.
Go ahead.
I have something coming in my ear here that we just moved up to number 2 on counterhate.com with this segment. So congratulations.
Oh, okay.
Great. All right.
Did we really? Oh, no.
No.
Okay.
Just like, you know, like you can't talk about this because we're climate deniers.
Right. They call us new deniers when we talk about how these solutions are actually not that good. I was on a PTA chat at the school that my kids go to, and they were saying, well, for the welcome back picnic, should we separate the barbecues for the veggie burgers and the meat burgers? And they only asked vegetarians in the group, would you be upset if the veggie burgers were on the meat grills? And I rang in and I was like, I actually am a meat eater and I don't want the veggie burgers on the meat grill because those are full of seed oils. And nobody responded to me. Oh, they were like, we don't want you. We only want the vegetarians.
They're like, basically, we don't want Natalie to respond to this.
Lunatic.
Yeah. Who's this meat-eating lunatic in the PTA chat? Like, we only want vegetarians.
They hate me in the PTA for many reasons. It.
Love it.
You're like the female Ron Swanson. Just from Parks and Rec.
Oh, okay. I don't know that character. I thought it was the Anchorman.
Oh, gotcha. No, where he's where he what, he doesn't eat vegetables because he doesn't eat the food that his food eats.
Okay,
so it's just, you know.
Uh-huh. That's good. That is good. I don't think you can make a TV character like that in 2024. You know, like someone who's anti-vegetable. You know,
yeah,
like you cannot. You know.
Yeah. I didn't make any friends with that. Like, keep seed oils off the actual meat, you know, grill.
So. Right.
Anyway,
We were at that barbecue, and one of the moms came over, and she's like, "Oh, yeah, I haven't eaten yet." And she's like, "Are there any veggie burgers left?" And I said something like, "Ah, you wouldn't want that anyway." Or I just made. I was
like, and she was like, "Oh, my son eats those," and we're like, "Okay." Oh, I mean, we're not.
You do you.
We're not those kind of parents. We're like, "Oh, you give your kids soda." You know, we try really hard to just live and let live. But why only ask the vegetarians in the group? Doesn't my dietary preference also mean as much?
Right.
That's not egalitarian.
No, apparently not.
Apparently, it doesn't.
It's part of your white rural rage.
I suppose. Okay. So
your personal gardening is ruining the world.
Right.
Yeah, right.
What does the attorney general want with this lawsuit? Here it says she's asking the court to require this meat company to cease its net zero by 2040 advertising campaign. But what if they make it? Right. Then what are you going to do? Like, could they countersue by 2040 and say, we actually did this? She wants a third party audit of its compliance with New York consumer protection statutes. And she wants all of this money, which she's calling ill-gotten gains. Like, they sold you meat, you bought it. Did you buy it on a false premise? And then you should be compensated because you wouldn't otherwise have bought that meat. New York Post columnist Betsy McCauhey says that this lawsuit is frivolous. She says that AG James has used the power of her office to go after President Donald Trump and now is targeting big business, and this will scare businesses out of the state of New York when they can ill afford it. So what do you think? Is this frivolous? It would seem to me that it's so easy to disprove these things in court, but I'm not a lawyer for the beef industry, so let me know what you think.
Oh, my gosh. this is what the world has come to, because you know she's like giving up, I guess, on Trump right now while
they're litigating, or while they're appealing the, yeah, the ruling.
She,
right?
You know, what can I do? She's like, what can I do to really win the hearts and minds of liberals? I'll go after meat.
I'm just so confused that she would use these things that are easy to prove, like this 14.5% number. You should know that in the United States, because it's way less than that.
And because in court, this would come out. Like, if we get to that point and we go to a hearing, this is going to come out.
But sometimes a lawsuit is a way of bullying people because they
almost all the time.
Right. They have to respond. They have to get their lawyers involved. Let us know what you think. We're going to talk next about the COVID vaccine paper that was canceled. It was retracted from the publication just weeks after it was published. It was trolled. It was absolutely politicized, and it was attacked by Big Pharma. We're going to talk to one of the lead authors about that, but we can't do that on this platform because there are certain conclusions on this platform, meaning YouTube, that we still don't feel safe saying there.
Yeah, but before we go over there, right?
Yes.
Before we go to that platform, which is Rumble. They are a free speech platform. So we're going to move. We're going to be going, continuing our stream. We'll continue unabated over on that other platform, which is that right there. We will continue our live stream as normal. But on this platform, on the one that censors you platform, we will not be able to continue here while we talk about this big peer-reviewed study and everything about that. So before we do that, though,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Provia Hair. Are you one of the millions of American men or women of any age dealing with premature hair thinning or loss? Or maybe you're scared about inheriting that thinning look because it just runs in the family? That's why we want to introduce you to Provia, a real solution that delivers on its promise without the harsh side effects, unwanted chemicals, and no need for a prescription. Provia uses safe, natural ingredients from something called Procapsil, to effectively target the three main causes of premature hair thinning and loss by supporting healthy scalp circulation, the delivery of nourishing nutrients and healthy hair follicles anchoring to your scalp. Provia guarantees more hair on your head than in the shower or on your comb. It's effective for men and women of any age and safe on colored, treated, and styled hair. It's that easy. And right now, new customers can save over 50% plus free shipping on Provia's introductory package by going to proviahair.com/redacted. Every package includes a full 60-day supply of Provia serum for daily use, plus the Provia Super Concentrate for faster, more noticeable results. And every order includes your choice of free gift right now at checkout. It works or your money back, so don't wait. Order now and save an extra 10% off plus free shipping. Go right now to proviahair.com/redacted.
All right. So we are going to head over now to our friends over on this platform right here, censorship free. Come over. And if you're not subscribed to us there, we stream there simultaneously every day. We'd love for you to subscribe. We now regularly have a lot more viewers watching us there on that free speech platform. So thank you guys. We have 20,000 of you watching us, streaming us over there. So good to see all of you guys. And welcome, welcome, welcome. We'll give you a second to join us here. And while we do wait for you to join us, we should remind you. So goodbye, YouTube. It's been great knowing you tonight. We'll be back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time on YouTube. So we are streaming live now on Rumble only. Good to see all of you guys. Before we get to our next segment, we want to tell you about our community. We have a great community. It's our Plus community, Redacted Plus. Again, this show is totally free. We try to provide a lot of value to you for free. We do a lot of research and have a lot of great guests and journalists on this show who are independent, who are not bought and paid for by billionaires. We are fully independent, but we could always use your support. So if you'd like to take that extra step, again, the show is free, but if you'd like to join our Redacted Plus community, you can, for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can sign up, get access to exclusive interviews, behind-the-scenes content, live streams that are only for you guys, and where we have our Redacted Book Club in there as well. And we're adding new things all the time. Plus, it's a great community to hang out with our Redacted Plus community, and a great way for us to stay connected to you outside of all of these big tech platforms. So become a Redacted Plus member, again, for the price of a cup of coffee once a month. You can do that. Go to redacted.inc if you'd like to support independent journalism. We need all the help we can get in this day and age. Again, we are not funded by billionaires, George Soros and the like. So redacted.inc.
A major peer-reviewed paper called for the halt of the COVID-19 mRNA vaccine, and it was retracted after it was peer-reviewed and published, clearly for political and not scientific purposes. We've been over this paper before with one of the lead authors, Nathaniel Mead. He's an epidemiologist and public health research scientist. He joins us again. Thank you so much for bringing this to our attention. I'm so sorry about all of your hard work.
Thank you. Well, you know, sometimes these things happen, and it's part of the, territory.
That's a good question. Does this happen? Because I went through a long way through academia, too. I know that usually instead of cancel, you rebut, right? So is it, I know in the cancel culture, there are so many papers that get retracted or apologized for if they are guilty of wrongthink. That's increasingly happens. That didn't make sense, what I just said. It happens increasingly. But is it really something like, well, that happens? I think it seems extreme to me.
Well, you're right. I am being somewhat, I'm trying to be accepting of it so that I can make peace with the fact that it's happened. But you're right. Prior to the pandemic, it was extremely rare, actually, to have retractions. If you go to the website called Retraction Watch, which is a really depressing website, partly because they have a lot of very offensive language on there, because it is sort of a celebration for the pharmaceutical industry. Look, we retracted another paper. They have a record of 404 retractions during the pandemic. So 404 retractions that are all related to COVID-19 control and mitigation. And of course, most of those are due to the vaccinations.
Wait. This is a website where people go out and try to get research about COVID-19 retracted?
No. They're simply reporting on retractions. They're simply saying, this paper got retracted and here's why. And usually the language is very offensive because it's the trolls who the pharmaceutical companies have trolls that go out and write very offensive things underneath papers that question the narrative. And we had to deal with that for weeks and weeks after we were published. But on this website, they have commentaries about papers that got retracted that are just, you know, they're very misleading and offensive.
So the site, though, is pro-retraction, right? Or the comments are.
Right. Well, yeah, basically, yes. Okay. It definitely has a strong bias. You know, I mean, we knew that when I submitted the paper, when it finally went through on January 24th, after multiple submissions, after 8 independent reviewers and a previous journal had already reviewed it as well, so we really had a total of 10 reviewers. These are scientists who looked at the paper very carefully, gave us tons of feedback, you know, and then it finally was accepted on January 24th, went through, but as soon as it went through, it started to get a lot of very heated comments, as well as many wonderful comments, you know, but we saw that there were two people commenting who, you know, this is a classic strategy. They try to take down the paper. You know, we were saying things that were brutally honest based on clear scientific information. And I think, you know, the fact that we said that these COVID-19 gene-based injections have never been shown in randomized controlled trials to be effective in preventing infection, transmission, hospitalization, or death. And then on top of that, we said that they were extremely unsafe, and we explained the degree to which they were unsafe, and we did calculations and provided very good estimates that were all completely validated by the reviewers. You know, so we went through the whole process. We also said, as you recall, that, you know, the trials were too short. They were only 2 to 3 months long, and the previous average was 10 years, typical 10 to 15 years. So by definition, they could not demonstrate safety with those trials. Right. And yet they came out saying that they were safe. So all
and,
of those
and the
things,
amount of time that they reported severe adverse events just dropped off, didn't account for injuries in between vaccinations. There was a lot of methodological problems with it. You're right. And they are clear as day in your paper.
Right. And also the long-range impacts of modified mRNA technology have never been assessed, which is an extremely dangerous thing. You know, carcinogenesis, mutagenesis, which is mutations of cells, autoimmune phenomena, impairment of fertility, which we didn't even really go into in our paper at all, reproductive issues. So there were, we actually just skimmed the surface, but we hit very, very hard the key safety issues that we identified, like the strokes, the heart attacks, the excess sudden death issue. You know, we addressed all of that. So serious adverse events, we hit it so hard, I think, that this was a huge threat to the industry. And when we got the retraction letter, it was very clear that this had come from the industry. It was clear to me because I've been working with the written word and editing, you know, since the early 1980s. And I've seen how you can tell the nuance, you can tell if something is not substantiated by anything, by any evidence at all, if it's just a blanket statement, you know that it's really coming out as a position statement. Because if the industry can get, or really let's call it the biopharmaceutical complex, that's what Dr. McCullough calls it. Mm-hmm. And that's this interlocking coordination or collaboration between the government agencies and the pharmaceutical industry. The agencies have been captured by the industry. So especially the CDC, which, you know, prior to the pandemic, everybody trusted. And now the CDC is fully captured. So they are serving as a mouthpiece for the pharmaceutical industry. And for the last few years, they've always said these are safe and effective. We were contradicting that very clearly in a very sophisticated way, I would say, with the evidence that we presented and laying out the adverse events, the serious adverse events, including deaths, in a way that had never been done before. This is really unprecedented. I'm not saying that as a chest-thumping statement for myself. I'm saying that my co-authors and I, it was a calculated risk. We knew that we were going to arouse the ire of the biopharmaceutical complex. Right. And the retraction letter, when you look at it, it's very clear that that's what it is. It's a set of position statements that are trying to nullify our paper.
Well, I've been through the VAERS data. I've been through the Pfizer data. You point out very simple things, such as they lost track of 400 patients. What happened there? The myocarditis data, it's so easy to see. One of the things you sent to me was a response to the editor-in-chief, the editors-in-chief, saying, can you point out exactly what you have a problem with? Because their response was very vague, like, we don't agree with this conclusion, or we don't think this data was represented, but it wasn't specific. And you said, why don't you publish a rebuttal? That's the gold star. Yeah. We welcome that. Have you received any response to that?
No, and we've resent that request many times. In fact, we just sent it again this morning. But you know, it would be too obvious to them. First of all, the publisher Springer Nature, which is again one of the biggest medical publishers in the world, it is probably the biggest. The executives at the top in Springer Nature have no science background. They're all business people, okay? So they're thinking primarily in terms of, well, we have a lot of open access journals. These are journals that depend heavily on pharmaceutical advertising and sponsorship of content. And so they knew that they were, I'm sure that they were heavily pressured, but we also know, and I can't say how we know, but we do know that there were there was a lot of pressure exerted on the executive editors, the editor-in-chiefs, the two of them, of Curious, the journal that published our paper. And that pressure was what finally broke the dam and made this retraction happen. So, you know, I think as we talked about before, it was basically a predatory, or no, I guess we didn't talk about this because you and I haven't talked about it yet. but it was a predatory retraction. You know, basically the way it works is, bless you, the way it works is, you know, it, if you get a retraction like this, you're suppressing the findings about the vaccine dangers, the risks. You're suppressing those findings. That's number one.
And clearly, yes.
And sharing those findings would be very beneficial to public health, but it's detrimental to the pharmaceutical interests. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, you're casting doubt on the research integrity and validity of the studies within the paper. So, you know, for the future, those studies can be looked at as, well, that paper cited it and that paper was retracted.
Oh, so yes. Yeah.
So the research integrity of the findings themselves is in question, and then it damages our reputation. Yes. And then it damages our reputations too. You know, the co-authors, all the co-authors' reputations are tarnished by a retraction typically, you know, when you look at it from the bigger picture, you know, the standpoint of all the censorship that's been going on, I've had professors from around the world write to me and say, you know, you have the badge of honor here with the retraction, because, you know, whenever you get when you get censored like this, it is clearly you've threatened the status quo, the pharmaceutical industry's narrative.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel good to be canceled in this way. You pointed out that the paper had been read over 350,000 times and some other statistics showed that the average Curious paper had about 2,700 views. It also had the highest ratings ever with a scholarship impact quotient of 9.3, which on a scale of 1 to 10. So there were not, it would seem, prior to this, a lot of people really rebutting as much. There was no argument against it. Was so the what had to happen was that it had to be canceled.
Yes, exactly. I think it was too successful, and it was too successful too fast. You know, that rating that you mentioned, which is a scholarship impact quotient SIQ rating, that rating would have probably hit 9.9 very quickly if it hadn't been for the fact that the industry sent their trolls in there to give us zero ratings across the board. Because when you leave your ratings, you have to leave, you know, it's for various criteria, and they put zeros across the board. So you can imagine how much higher the rating would have been if they hadn't done that. So
a zero, you know, this is was so immature. Like you have to engage on the content. Right? That's crazy.
It's immature. It's immature and it's dishonest. It's very dishonest. You know, I mean, we complained about this. I complained about it. I said, look, you know, you guys, you do see that these guys are putting zero ratings, and they could have at least been creative and put a three or a four in there, you know, but, you know, I said, you know, this is your paper. I mean, you accepted this paper. It went through the peer review process. Your editors accepted it, and now you're rejecting it after the fact, ex post facto. So, you know, this was when we got the retraction letter. I'll just mention some of the points they made and how bizarre it was, because, you know, first of all, the first two points, there were 8 points that they made, and this came from Tim Kirchess, who's of an underling in the Springer Nature group, and they call him the head of research integrity support, which I find a very ironic statement, kind of Orwellian, really. Yeah. But
I have them here. We can put them up on the screen. Why don't you address them? Great.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, sure. So the first two were direct. this is hard to believe, but they were taken directly from one of the trolls' comments underneath the article after it was published. So when the trolls came online, you know, these are two trolls that are very well known, Laxton and Doppler, and they came on, and the first two comments were taken verbatim from one of the trolls' comments, which is that we misrepresented all-cause mortality and we misrepresented the VAERS data. Well, we didn't do either one of them.
So say how. Like, they don't say how. What is their interpretation of that data, right?
right. I mean, it's very, I would say, you know, it's kind of... the whole thing, the whole list is that way, though. They don't say how or why. They don't give any real support for any of the statements. Actually, they kind of contradict themselves in a couple of them. But, you know, then they, because, like, for example, with the VAERS data, we never said that VAERS is showing cause and effect. We just said that it's showing a signal, you know, which is mm-hmm. a danger signal. And we clearly said that in the paper. And so for all of these points, we were able to show how our paper actually showed the opposite. You know, for example, the third point they're saying that was based on estimates of lives saved versus deaths mm-hmm. for Pfizer and Moderna. And they said there does not appear to be convincing evidence for this claim. It's not a claim. It's an analysis. We did an analysis, and it's not evidence. When you look at an analysis, you're using data, and in this case, it was data from the trials. We were simply using data from the trials, and we did an analysis. So yeah. This kind of statement shows a certain level of scientific illiteracy that is kind of stunning, and actually... If I was an editor of the journal Curious, and they got scapegoated for this, the editors, but if I was an editor for, I would be embarrassed to have this being attributed to them. The fourth point, vaccines are gene therapy products. That's not a statement we actually made. What we said was that the mRNA vaccines have been described interchangeably as gene therapy products and as mRNA vaccines in the cancer literature. We said that. So it's
because of the components, and that's not controversial.
Yeah, it's not controversial. You're right. I mean, you're planting a genetic code in the body, and that genetic code generates spike protein. That's the basic mechanism, and it's very, very straightforward. The next point about DNA contamination. You know, we provided very good references. They were all accepted by all eight reviewers. The editors accepted it. So this is clearly, when you look at points number 4, 5, 7, and 8, you can clearly see that they're industry position statements, okay? Mm-hmm. That's all that they are. They're trying to get the vaccine industry off the hook, and they figure if they can retract a very comprehensive, well-substantiated paper like ours, then they can try to make these points stick.
Yeah.
You know, and protect themselves.
Well, look at number seven, which makes me kind of made me laugh. Says the article states that the mRNA vaccines did not undergo adequate safety and efficacy testing, which the journal considers to be incorrect. That's a value-based judgment that they're just basically letting us know they don't like it.
Well, and, you know, this was the basis for the whole paper. You know, we created that. That was our central premise. So, you know, usually when you submit a paper, it's either rejected right up front because they don't like the concept or they don't agree with it, they don't want to do it, which they could have done, or they accept it, but then they have reviewers who are biased against it, and so then they reject it with the reviewers, or they run it through a review process where the reviewers are not biased and it goes through the process that we went through and it's accepted. That's what we went through. And so this should have been, you know, that central point, number seven, which was the one of the most fundamental premises of the whole paper, that would have been grounds for rejecting the paper outright if they disagreed with it, if the journal considered it to be incorrect. But it's so clear that it's not incorrect because, as we've said before, there's no possibility that they tested for safety. I mean, especially long-term safety, you know, which is how the vaccine trials are usually done, to make sure, hopefully, that you can account for long-term issues. And then the final statement, that spike proteins produced by the COVID-19 vaccines linger in the body and cause adverse effects, that there are dozens of studies that have shown this. I mean, this is not even debatable. Which, of course, it answers your point when you said earlier, have they responded? Of course they haven't responded. This would be embarrassing for them. I mean, they could never debate us, and none of their, their trolls who fancy themselves as research scientists, I mean, it's really a joke.
I interrupted you when you were talking about the SV40. Now, that is something that has been shown to cause cancerous tumors, I believe, in rodents. And that is what you say, right? You don't specifically make... Well, I'll let you respond to that.
Well, no, you're right. I mean, this is exactly... We were very clear that we're not saying that it causes cancer outright in humans. What we're saying is it's very likely a co-carcinogen. So it works in combination with a predisposition to cancer. If someone has other risk factors that definitely predispose them to cancer, the SV40 sequence is very likely to pose a risk. But we don't know. We don't know because the studies haven't been really done yet. But from a precautionary point of view, if you have an SV40 sequence in there, you definitely don't want to be taking a product that could result in integration of that sequence into the human genome. And if that happened, it would be devastating. It would be cancer at a mass scale, which we may already be seeing. We don't know. We may already be seeing cancers being triggered by this, but the only way to know that is to follow over time. So now that we have a situation where we don't have a crisis anymore, and I would say that we really had much less of a crisis than most people believe back in 2020, but we have very little, there's no ground to stand on, I'm sorry, there's no ground to stand on to justify these shots at this time for anybody in the population, including the so-called high-risk groups. In fact, the high-risk groups are probably more at risk of dying if they get these shots, because the spike protein causes so much immune dysfunction and inflammation. They're very dangerous products, and there should be no argument at this point, which is, I think, why they shot this paper down, because this is their last gasp. We're going to get this republished, and it's going to get even more media attention. So there is a lot of benefit to this for the world, ironically, because people need to see that the censorship is real. It's been happening. It's been happening for years. You know, Dr. McCullough has been through it several times. He went through it with his book on Amazon. He went through it, he and Jessica Rose, their first myocarditis paper, an excellent paper, very well done. It got retracted after it was on there. His autopsy review was incredible. You know, it showed like 240 autopsy cases, all independently judged or adjudicated by three independent medical reviewers. And it showed that the deaths were happening within 14 days, the vast majority, and 75% of all of the presumed deaths were validly connected to the mRNA vaccines. Now, okay. That was retracted by Lancet. So these retractions are happening a lot. It's very unfortunate.
Yeah.
One last thing. It was a violation of the Committee of Publication Ethics, the COPE guidelines. I should state that.
Oh, yes. You sent me an email from this doctor that I really liked, who talked about how the COPE guidelines allow retractions for three reasons: plagiarism, manipulation of fake data, or wrong analytical or statistical procedures. And this person says, please, which one applies here? What did you use to retract this? Or was it just because of conclusions that you did not like? It seems that the latter is true.
Yes. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, basically, anything that violates Koch guidelines is in alignment with a fraudulent study. You know, you're falsifying the data, you're falsifying the research. We didn't do that. We simply reported on the published research, and then we reanalyzed some of the data that came from the clinical trials. But we didn't falsify anything. So there was nothing fraudulent. And in fact, they're in violation of the COPE guidelines. Ironically, the person who issued the retraction letter, he's on the COPE committee, but he has no science background.
Oh, for goodness sakes. I wonder.
So that's a conflict of interest.
Yeah. I wonder if you saw our interview with Regina Watil about the FISMN study in Canada and how they made up data to show that the unvaccinated were a harm to the vaccinated. So when you see what junk science can be issued for publication and when real science then is canceled, you know something is wrong and that this is politics. I want to ask you before I let you go about, you said you know that there was political pressure or industry pressure to retract this paper, but you can't tell me how. And my first thought was, okay, but if you litigate, I would know because then you will go through discovery. So is there a way here that you can litigate because your First Amendment right to academic freedom?
Well, that's a really good question. I'm not a lawyer, obviously, and I don't know what the ramifications of this are from a legal standpoint. I only know that... you know, having open, free scientific discourse and debate is essential to the evolution of our understanding of any serious issue in science. We have to be able to talk about these things openly. And I think we probably do have a case, but I don't want to get involved with a lawsuit against a massive publishing house because I think it could be very costly. I think it could get very dirty. They would probably depose lots of editors who they would pay on their end to say that our paper was insufficient and inadequate and all these things. So I just don't want to go through that. I sued a publishing house back in 2000 and it was not a pleasant thing. It was a clear breach of contract. I sued them. I ended up losing a huge amount of money in the process, even though they settled, but they settled for an amount that didn't even pay for my legal fees. So I'm not very excited about doing a lawsuit, but one of my co-authors who has a lot of money is thinking of doing it. If he wants to do it, you know, I guess I might support it because this is freedom. You're talking about freedom. You're right. This is a First Amendment issue. So I mean, I think on that basis, there is a case to be made. I'm just a little, I have some PTSD around it.
I get it. So. I get it. You know, I was talking to my mother about this, who at one point was very pro-vaccination. And I was like, Mom, you know, these are the industry pressures pushing back against this. And she goes, I believe it. I saw The Fugitive. So, you know, it's literally the plot of movies. We buy into it when it comes to fiction, but it's real. So thank you for keeping us apprised on what you're up to. And I wish you the best of luck getting it republished. Also, I would love to see this journal apologize and retract their retraction. We will keep following this story. And where can our viewers follow along with what you're doing?
Well, I again, for now, I would just encourage everybody to subscribe to Dr. McCullough's Substack, Courageous Discourse. I am in the process of proposing a new online database system that will be integrity-based scientific journal archive system. And I'm in the process of trying to launch that so that we have something that's free of influence from the pharmaceutical industry. And I'm going to call it FreeMed. But this is the alternative to PubMed. And it will include, we already have 5 journals that qualify, they're high quality journals. So that's going to be my effort, but please follow Dr. McCullough on X or Twitter. and subscribe to Substack. And at some point, I'm going to start a Substack, probably next week. So
excellent. Okay, we'll follow along. So, well, thank you again for coming back on Redacted and telling us all about it. I look forward to speaking with you again for some better updates next time.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
That's going to do it for us tonight here at Redacted. Thank you so much for watching. Hey, do your part. I think we've proven that censorship is real, that pressure from the biopharmaceutical industry is real. Retractions are real. So share while you still have the right to free speech. Like, share, comment. All of those things help us out. And come back tomorrow. We really appreciate you being here with us. Thanks so much, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.